The first one is around how cities can work together to increase and impact the sustainability of hosting events. So that's the first thing to, you know, probably discuss, challenge. Can we, can't we? So anybody want to kick that off? I might pick on people otherwise. Can you give your name and where you come from? Because I understand it's being recorded as well.
So Paul Dunphy, Sport Business, and I think you might have heard that I'm from Auckland in New Zealand. Good question to you though, Paul, or maybe to the group. Is there an entity that cities can essentially join that, you know, that they can collaborate, you know, other than just going to conferences and stuff like that?
Okay, I'll let my colleague Stuart Turner come in this without putting him on the spot. Paul probably knows this, and other people in the room, certainly like Eamon, Will, and one or two others. Probably for a decade now, there's been a desire to bring host cities together into a collective of people that can share ideas, share best practice, and share intelligence. To be brutally honest, it's always failed, and I don't say this disrespectfully, because it's been very much commercially driven. And it's been around membership fees and association fees. And there's always been concerns around potentially conflicts of interest, sharing best practice with people that might use it for different purposes. And I'm being very honest and brutally honest. But earlier this year at Sport Accord in Sochi, there was a discussion again, very much started by Ian Edmondson, who's head of events at London Partners. Ian's had obviously a fantastic track record down there of what they've achieved and succeeded with. And there's now been two meetings in the last few months of collectives of like-minded people around host cities. One in Lausanne, which Emma went to. Did anyone else go to Lausanne yet? So two people in the room went to Lausanne. I think there was probably about 20, 25 people there. And it really was a worldwide forum. So we had people from New Zealand, America, and other parts of the world discussing what that would happen. And then we had a similar type of session here on Sunday night in Glasgow, which lasted about an hour, hour and a quarter. And I think there is a desire that at least once or maybe twice a year, and some of it will be done informally through Skype, telephone conference, etc., that like-minded groups come together to share best practice. Stuart, do you want to say what we got out of Sunday night in terms of some of the objectives?
Yeah. All right. Yeah, just probably a couple of things to pick out. I think the first one was that people generally agreed across both those meetings and the meeting that happened at Sport Accord back in Sochi that it should be a relatively loose association rather than a membership organisation. How loose and exactly how that works, I don't think we've quite got to. But I think there was a general agreement about that. I think there was also an agreement that we saw that as being for not-for-profit organisations that are involved in hosting events. And it's very much about exchange of best practice. It's about exchange of ideas, potentially looking at how we can develop some innovative ideas around event hosting. And also, I think probably about keeping everybody honest in the whole way we work. So we were looking back to the fact that a lot of the international federations have their associations. They definitely compare notes on which cities are good hosts and which cities have got lots of money, etc., etc. And it's really just reversing that back the other way and saying, you know, actually we could be smarter about how we work and about what we've derived and actually maybe what we've done wrong. In these kind of, I don't know whether to say fora or forums, but anyway, these kind of meetings, people aren't always that honest about the things they've done wrong. We like to talk about the things we've done well, and we like to publicise ourselves and tell everybody we're great. We're looking for a kind of, if you like, a cartel of friends where it's actually okay to say, we mucked this one up. Actually, if you're going to do this, you want to make sure you don't do it the way we did it. And I think that's the kind of benefits that people are looking for out of something that's a little bit more formal than maybe some of the relationships that we already have. I mean, certainly from a Scotland point of view, we already have a relationship like that with New Zealand, with Melbourne, and we have a very friendly exchange with people like Lars Lundhoff in Denmark, and some of the English cities, particularly London, Manchester, where we would have a bit of exchange of information, etc. But but they're relatively informal, and it's really trying to widen that out and also put it in a position that people that haven't been around the traps 100 times and don't know everybody can actually get that information as well.
So I guess discuss, what do people think? Is it a value? If you could say where you're from and your organisation, your name.
Yeah, I'm Dennis Mills from Major Events International. It's just perhaps picking up a comment. I think step one is definitely getting the cities together, etc. But it's picking up on the point of what works and what doesn't work. We regularly host commercial companies sitting in front of organising committees and CEOs. And the experience that they've had from those occasions has been phenomenal. Because a lot of commercial companies will say, I don't actually understand why you spent that money doing that, number one. Or number two, it could be significantly better if you thought about doing this way or procuring in that way. So I'm always kind of nervous, but perhaps you'd expect me to say that, because we are even though we run our membership scheme, which we run as effectively a not-for-profit, but we are a commercial company. And I think there's a bit of a hurdle to get over here, because there's a bit of a danger with organising committees that they can be a travelling circus of the same people who actually do not want to admit what works and what doesn't work. And I'm just making a little plea that, you know, commercial companies do have a lot to offer, I think, for organisers or host cities in terms of how to save their money or how to make the whole visitor experience better. But I'm happy to be challenged on the point.
Thoughts, comments? Everyone's gone quiet, Dennis. Does everybody think it's a good idea to bring collectives together?
Oh, totally. I think the thought I had is going to the city side as well as this audience. One thought, and the Glasgow Berlin example is a great start, that the twin city movement is such an anachronism from the 70s, and I think in Britain we don't even stick it on our signs anymore. You do on the continent. But there is a little opportunity where you can tie up through events, perhaps. Maybe sports sets the precedent, it might be other things. I had a chat with Stavanger, colleague Tona earlier. I know, coming from Aberdeen, that there's a great North Sea link. In fact, North Sea Rim has been described as a country in its own right, including Dutch places, etc. So I'm possibly not thinking out the box. It may be that this has occurred to others, but that tying cities together, this is for a specific event opportunity, something like this forum is a means of creating it, this forum that's been proposed with cities.
Some of your questions, Dennis, and hopefully trying to allay some of your fears. The concerns amongst hosts, from what I read, is purely around the increasing cost of rights fees, a very topical subject matter on the basis of what came out yesterday, integrity and transparency around bidding, and to be honest, then sharing best practice in terms of what did work and what didn't work. Now, I think that's probably quite different to probably what you described. As you know, it's something I'm very passionate about to try and achieve, and I know there's quite a few people now as a collective in the world feel that we can do that. So we can pick up the phone to any one of these people in the room and say, you've just hosted X, what did you think? You know, we're being asked for Y pounds or Y euros, and yet you paid. And I think that's a discussion we have to have as a collective. And then maybe you move into step two is a slightly different format. Any more thoughts? Yep, got one here.
Thank you. So I'm João Saravia from Rio 2016 Organizing Committee. I think I'm just reinforcing some things and maybe thinking of the format of this whole event. It was the first time I participated in an event like this, and it was very very interesting, and I learned a lot. But just reinforcing some things, it sometimes feels like people are showcasing the good things that they did, and this is really important. But I remember when I was back in London in 2011, and it was pre-games time, obviously. I was at LOCOG, and I was asking I'm procurement director in Rio 2016, and I was asking the procurement team from LOCOG two questions. First, what are the good things that you did and that you now think, wow, I'm very happy that I did this because it helped a lot. And I think this is kind of the message we receive on events like this. But there was the second question, like, if you could do what you did again, what would you do differently? Because what I was going to do on delivering Rio 2016 is exactly that. I would have the second chance. So and people would really, when you, the way you propose the question makes them free to just think. It's not that they got it wrong. It's some many times because things change in the middle of the way, or someone else's plan was not as good as yours and impacted yours, and you had to change all around your things. And then you start thinking more strategically on the whole picture. And people feel free of saying the bad things or the things they would do better. So maybe a way to improve the way that we're exchanging information is really asking those two questions. I think we're focusing on the first one.
I think you're absolutely right. One of the discussions we started to get into on Sunday night and haven't yet got to the end point is the case study discussion. And it might be that we come up with a template that says you have to actually say what worked and what didn't work. So that we do, we're then sharing best practice in inverted commas, because it's really important to learn from the things that didn't work as much as the things that did work, because the things that did work are the easy bits. But in terms of, you know, how was the relationship with the rights holder? You know, how much time did you have to spend working with them? What was the media broadcast like, if that was a relevant thing? Spectators, sponsorship, the whole host of things. So I think you're right, procurement's an even more interesting subject matter, particularly from a European perspective now. And you'll have been through it in London with EU law now, it's becoming increasingly more challenging for all of us.
You're a quick runner. Just for the procurement, because it's a key issue for the changing city role is the innovative procurement. It's something which strikes us as cities, and it's a little bit as well, this one, uncomfortable, because we have to change the way that we procure, but at the same time, it's an asset for the city as well as for the events coming to the city, because it means you can do things in a different way. It means for a city that before we used to describe, okay, we want to buy this, it has this capacity, this size, blah, blah, all the standards, and then who can deliver this? Now the situation is, to put it very, very simple. Well, we need something to fix this. Who can make it? And then somebody says, well, I think maybe I can. And then another one say, maybe I can. Okay, why don't the two of you speak together and will the three of us find the solution for whatever we need? And that's a new way of procuring which will affect events as well as businesses when they work with cities.
Okay, so just going back to the question, how cities can work together to increase the impact and sustainability of hosting events. Any final comments on that? I mean, generally people think a collective is a positive way forward. Paul?
So Paul, is that membership to that, and when it does get off the ground, does it have to be just limited to cities, or can it be, you know, dare I say, consultants as well, who actually work with cities?
I don't know. We'd have to ask the collective about that. I think there'd be... My personal view is
I'd be on my best behaviour.
There'd be some nervousness around commercial entities, whatever they meant, getting involved, because I think that one of the things that certainly I'm quite keen to do, and certainly from my involvement from a Scottish perspective, this has to be, excuse the terminology if people don't understand it from a linguistic point of view, the discussions need to be Chatham House rules. And you know, so it's not recorded. So we can have a very open and honest dialogue that stays in the room, but actually goes away as knowledge and intelligence. So I don't know the answer to that question. It's something we'd have to...
I mean, my gut feeling is probably no.
That's my gut feeling?
Yeah.
My gut feeling would be no, and then have a different way, as we said before, of engaging.
Correct.
But there might be a splice, for example, in this, you say sustainability, reuse of events, or the travelling circus, so if a venue were to move, and
series of six over decades, then they maybe belong in the party. They're the ones who go ahead, and that kind of a consultant could sit in there. It is commercial, but it's also reusing. It struck me that always, no one found another use for the other 11 months of the year for Edinburgh Military Tattoo stands. They get packed down and kept in Edinburgh. They are very specific to that mound, but it's not beyond the wit of man to replicate that and reuse those stands, which are dedicated to Edinburgh.
Yeah. Hi, Paul Fosser from Foamhand. Just picking up on your point about the commercial entities. We're doing all the operational planning for the Garden Bridge. For those who don't know about it, new bridge being built over the Thames, pedestrian bridge, which is basically going to be a garden, and we're looking to host a lot of major events on there, particularly to make it commercially viable. I don't think there's many other garden bridges in the world. We're bound to make lots of mistakes along the way, and it's something we know we're happy to share what we did wrong and what we did right on that journey. So obviously we're delivering that on behalf of the mayor and the other partners, but we're a commercial organisation. But you know, we'd be more than happy to kind of learn from that, and I'm sure our colleagues at ARUP, who are doing a lot of the modelling and engineering work, would also be happy to kind of share some of the bits that they've done right and done wrong as well. So I'd actively encourage the engagement of commercial partners in that. We'd be happy to tell you what we've done wrong.
That's great, thank you. Stuart?
Yeah, I'll just shout. I'm probably agreeing with Dennis's point right at the beginning, which is that the work that NEI and other companies do is really, really valuable. And I just don't think it's part of this. I think this is something that doesn't exist at the moment. And I do think that people sharing information and knowledge is great. And I think actually getting people together in a room, whether they be rights holders, commercial companies, or hosts, is great. But I think what we're talking about is everybody else has got their own grouping, their own trade association, whereas the hosts don't. And the idea is, do we want to do that? In addition to, it's definitely not trying to stop any of that other good work that already happened. So I think the idea here is a complementary group of hosts, not trying to take away from the things that the commercial companies are already doing, many of which are very, very useful to the industry.
Okay, I'm probably going to move. I'll finish with Ian, and then I'm going to move on to the next topic. Ian McKenzie.
Thanks, Paul. I don't need to introduce myself now. I think a couple of points. Hopefully, I can make two. One is that the IOC has its impact assessment study. They've introduced those for previous cities. So, you know, what has the impact been? I think that the IOC, unless you're an Olympic bidding city, won't share information, so maybe they need to be persuaded that there's lessons. It might be an Olympic Games, but there's lessons for other events from that. And the IPC has its impact assessment forum that's been established. So, you know, there are bodies out there. What's often the danger with these things, that everybody goes down their own road, and there isn't anything pulling all that together in the sharing. So it's not just about the cities. There's information that's been collected. How good that information is could be open to question. I haven't seen it, so I can't comment on that. But I know that quite often, if that's left to the host city to report, it's what will happen, as was mentioned earlier. You hear the good news stories, you don't hear so much about what didn't work. So how do you make that objective rather than somebody promoting how good their games were? I think the other bit about city sharing, it's totally different from what you're saying, but it's about cities within countries who want to bid for an event. And if you're bidding for a major sport event, if it's the Olympics, Commonwealth Games, or whatever, you're a host city. There are countries who don't have cities large enough to be the host city, but they may have several cities. And that does, in some way, dissipate the effect in terms of needing not just one athlete's village, maybe satellite villages, but it would have an impact on that city because not everywhere needs total regeneration. And it's something that games holders, the rights holders to the games, should maybe be pressured into thinking a bit broader than just the focus being in one city.
And I think that came out yesterday, didn't it? You know, cannot countries big for the Olympics? Yeah, I mean, there was two things I took away from yesterday. One is the general geo creep of events moving to oil and gas rich countries, which we've seen particularly around World and European Championships and major games. So, as we said last night, Western Hemisphere is struggling. So maybe a collective could help us in terms of intelligence. And the other one was, well, could a country bid for a major games rather than a city? I mean, at present, it's very city-focused, isn't it? Albeit Agenda 2020s and Transformation 2022 from a Commonwealth perspective is looking to change that. Okay, I'm going to move on, and we might come back to you, Ian, because you were pivotal to this in Glasgow. Is the next area to look at is sharing experiences of regeneration. And I guess is regeneration the total catalyst for a multi-sport or a single sport bid? And we've got Eamon in the room from a Manchester perspective, hosted the Games in 2002. We've obviously got people from London who will understand the East End of London scenario. We've got people from a Rio point of view in terms of what's happening in Rio. So, Ian, do you just want to paint the landscape? And you might have done it earlier this morning. I wasn't here, sadly. But in terms of that regeneration agenda for the East End of Glasgow.
East End of Glasgow, one of the poorest areas in the whole of the United Kingdom. When we were putting the bid together, the Clyde Gateway regeneration area had already been established, and that didn't just cover the East End of Glasgow. It was a wider area. It went into South Lanarkshire, which was also an area of various degrees of deprivation. So you had an organisation whose role it was to try and pull different strands together. So trying to fit the Emirates Arena and the Velodrome into that area, you know, we walked in there and said, well, this is going to have, it's going to be a beacon within there and attract other investments. And Clyde Gateway were right behind that and fully supportive and enabling. But the decision also by Glasgow to place the Athletes Village adjacent to that also promoted more work. And currently going on is, I suppose it's a countryside recreation area within an urban setting across the other side of the River Clyde from the Athletes Village, and a bridge has currently been built to link the two. So a lot of investments have all gone that complement each other. And in the past, in regeneration, far too often it's been, we'll have an initiative, and that initiative finishes, and nothing happens, and so it withers. In the East End, what's happened is that it's just built a momentum, and there's a coherence about it that hopefully, you know, and only time will tell if the long term will be successful, but it has that feeling that, and Ian Mads, the chief exec of Clyde Gateway, said, you know, you're speaking to a woman in anecdotes, I love anecdotes, who said, I used to watch out my kitchen window watching the Emirates Arena getting built, now I work there. You know, and one of the thing I mentioned earlier about 60% of the Glasgow Club members live within 2 miles of the Emirates Arena. You know, these things, big, huge structure, but it's actually having a local impact in a positive sense.
So that'll be impacting on the health and participation agendas as well.
That's right, but also on the business, because if you have an international arena, you know, you need suppliers, you know, you need special caterers, you need all the other things that go with events. So when the Davis Cup semi-final was held there, Great Britain against Australia, you know, they had a world focus on the East End of Glasgow for a positive reason rather than historically the poor reasons, you know, so the reason for people to go there.
So Eamon, I'm going to bring you in because it's 13 years since Manchester, ironically another East End of the city, and those of you who knew Manchester in the late 90s, if you went there now, it's probably unrecognisable.
Yeah, I mean, a very similar story to the East End of Glasgow, I guess. I think, interestingly, putting regeneration up there as opposed to, say, sport or culture, Manchester's objective has always been about regenerating that area, and the vision from the city and the city council has been how to do that. Two Olympic bids and a Commonwealth Games bid successful was the reason it was sport. It could have been anything else because it was about jobs. It was about regenerating East Manchester. It was about a long-term plan. And I remember talking to people way back when we built the Velodrome in 94 about the plans for the area. And if you stood there and looked at it, you wouldn't have believed it, because it was essentially a brownfield site, ready for some development in an area of the city that was never going to get any investment other than public sector. If you go there now, it's obviously quite remarkable with the Etihad Stadium, the Etihad Campus, a new leisure centre, a new school. obviously the sports facilities that surround that. I think that talking honestly about what we could do better or the challenges that we face is much of that activity is public sector led. And it's how you get the commercial sector to join with you on that long journey and start that investment strategy. Those who will remember, one of our strategies was around the mega casino, which almost happened, stopped at the Lords at the last hurdle. That wasn't about casino at all. It was about regenerating the area. It's about 3,500 jobs. One of the challenges with sporting facilities, especially the nature we've got, and not dissimilar, they're all community sports facilities as well as event facilities, but the footfall is not as large as the site needs. It's not creating that retail attraction, and it's not creating an area outside of the city that would start to attract commercial. So that is a challenge Manchester faces 13 years on. If you go there, it is quite remarkable, but it's public sector led, and it now needs to have a commercial sector, a retail sector coming in and supporting that. The other side of it, it was a regeneration scheme. It was very similar. It's a social regeneration scheme, so it's about people focused, but it was about housing, about schools. That part of the jigsaw puzzle, that investment, is absolutely amazing. It's really now looking forward to see how that can continue. And from my perspective, naturally, I'm looking to see how sport and events, the type of sport events that can go there week after week after week, that can start to support that agenda.
Anyone else in this area? I'm going to ask a couple of questions of some people otherwise.
Well, can I just add that, just pick up on something you said, that after the games, the one thing that worried me is that, you know, because so much focus happened in the east end of Glasgow, do the politicians then say, well, we've actually spent enough here, let's move to another bit of the city, which is, you know, deserving, there's no question about it, that there's areas that could be developed. But, you know, what happens to the momentum? Now, I don't think that's happening, but again, time will tell if it does or not. And I hope it doesn't, because so much has gone in there, and I think there's enough, a critical mass there to keep it going. But again, you know,
well, you give me the perfect.
I think the job's been done.
You give me the perfect entry to bring Paul back in terms of America's Cup in Auckland. Which I perceive now is sustained by commercial businesses in terms of the harbour. Is that true?
Yeah.
Public regeneration to bring the America's Cup, but it's now mainly F&B entertainment.
Yeah, correct. I mean, the America's Cup 2000 and 2003, it was won in 1995 in San Diego, and what you had there were polluted water, fruit and vegetable selling areas, fish markets, but all really run down. And it was through a chap, Sir Peter Blake, who actually won the cup, brought it back here, and once we won it, they thought, my God, what the hell are we going to do? Where are we going to host this? It was a great opportunity. And, you know, it was the catalyst for changing the face of Auckland. And, you know, it's a remarkable what Auckland transformation has gone through. I think for the Rugby World Cup, it was one of the legacies that we had there, that we actually keep the waterfront revitalised and using the Rugby World Cup to, you know, to access that that piece of land. And the transformation for Auckland has been amazing just through one major event, and that would not have happened without the America's Cup. It would have taken probably another 20 years for that to happen, 30 years. And it's been pretty, pretty amazing.
I was going to come to Rio next, because it's the obvious place to go.
Well, all right, thank you. It's a little uncomfortable talking about things that are still to happen. So I would think it's much better to see, well, maybe next year or in a couple of years, okay, what has been really done and accomplished, and how did Rio work with the challenge of, okay, now that everything is set, what do we do with this? But the Rio project is really, really ambitious. So many times we ask ourselves, we say, well, we don't have enough hotels, or massive mass transportation isn't ready. We have so many problems. Why are we going to host an event as the Olympics in Rio? And well, the idea behind hosting the event was really transforming. So what we're doing in Rio were projects that were in the drawer for 40 years,
And I can say that really comfortably because I'm almost 40. And since I was born, I was told that, well, there's a project for this, there's a project for that, and there's a project for that. And well, why don't we do this? And hosting the event was really the leverage of getting those projects out of the drawer. So we are connecting all the city and transportation and not only the postal card from Rio, but really going to the interior of Rio, because we've distributed in 4 clusters in the city and we have to connect them. So in terms of massive transportation, we're really great. We're doing things that we wouldn't imagine. The metro extension, the underground extension, it's another project that's fantastic. The renovation of both the internal flights and international flights, airports are being refurbished and expanded as well. I was born in Rio, and to me, it's really clear how we've changed the city in terms of things that are important for the city itself. The Olympics will use those that infrastructure, obviously, but for one who lives there, it's just things you couldn't think of 10 years ago. If you take a picture of what Rio was in terms of infrastructure in January 2007, where we held the Pan American Games, for example, and what it will be in January 2017, it's a completely different city. And what made us take those projects out of the drawer and get the investments to do that was really the leverage of being a host city. So I think it's just fantastic. Well, and so I don't want to be misunderstood, but sometimes I think when we are outside of Brazil and we hear people talking, they like to showcase the good things that they do outside, and they like to showcase the things that don't work in Brazil, for example. I heard a couple of things like that yesterday. I completely disagree with what was said, but that's not the point. The point is, there are things that didn't work, and that's the second question I was talking about. There were things that we could have done, and we had the leverage for that, and we didn't do it, and it's not going to be ready, and it's not going to be there. But all the amazing stuff that we've done, it's a really showcase. We transform completely the city. So it's I think it's a real showcase and a good example. I think it's the one transformation we have as everybody showcases Barcelona, I think Rio will be the same. Well, I think what has been carried on from the World Cup is the expansion we started for the airports, for example. This is one thing, because the World Cup, as it's divided in the whole country, you didn't have much investment focused in Rio itself. Because, for example, we already had the Maracanã, so there was a reform there and refurbished, but we had the venue. And the investment that you see in infrastructure mainly are venues when you talk about FIFA World Cups, I believe, or at least in Brazil, that was it, and the airports, for example. And so I think the airport and I think the airport was the legacy for the World Cup to the Olympics in Brazil, although we are continuing to expand the airports.
Does anybody have a regeneration example in a smaller city or smaller population, because it's all about scalability ultimately?
I have some thoughts, and some are bigger. Firstly, I was involved in Manchester too, and wonderful success that sprung off it. I'm more interested in the smaller scale bubbles as that happened. Clearly, the development of Eastlands was the catalyst, included the metro extension and particularly grouting a lot of mine shafts. What I recall in the immediate aftermath, it actually triggered the northern quarter, at the time, Castlefield, I think, was the story of regeneration in Manchester. And actually, Castlefield dipped then later when you did Salford Quays. So, you know, it swings and roundabouts. In which context I wanted to also think describe the legacy in London, not so much built fabric, but I think what Delancey, Qatari DR Delancey and Triathlon are doing with the housing, and in this country reintroducing rental as a model, not necessarily shouted about by our government, but they're determining long-term rental and establishing something we only know an assured short-term tenancy as a contract, but they're setting a legacy there, which is an intangible, but I think will do wonders, as the village itself did. The two other examples I had, Munich, when they had the Olympics, tragic story there, but it took more than 25 years before people moved into that athlete's village. It was student housing for a long time. And then, this goes a long time back, but one of my favorite seminal piece of architecture, Montreal Habitat 67, on the back of the Expo, beautiful piece of housing, and it was sought after immediately, but it didn't trigger regeneration in that area. It remained heavily industrial, out on the waterfront, out on a limb, in fact, beyond the harbour, you could say. Always successful. It's been successful for 40 years. Everyone wants to go there, but a bit of a kind of brutal lump out on the horizon. It didn't trigger regeneration.
Okay, we'll take last comment on regeneration and move on.
Yeah, I mean, just a point really about how sporting events or cultural events or conferences fit in with a city-wide regeneration strategy. I think most cities are the same. You take Manchester's vision 30 or 40 years ago, was the reason why East Lancs got developed. But it's also the reason the city centre is redeveloped. It's also the reason the Metrolink has expanded. And it's also the reason Spinningfields and now Granada has started to develop. It's the reason we made a bid to create an international festival, which within three or four seasons became internationally renowned, because that vision and that strategy was about regenerating the city. So if you're working in cities, I think you've got to understand the whole, not just East Lancs and not just why we want sporting events, but why cities are even embarking upon a long journey of regeneration. And only then can you bring those values and those social benefits that a major event will bring. It's not about the event. Of course it's not. The event is simply part of the journey. But I feel quite a lot of people who come to Manchester don't understand that journey. And we're teaching them the journey when actually I think that kind of it's out there, and you need to understand it if you want to work in a city like Manchester, because those are the benefits we need you to bring to help grow that vision.
Could a single World or European Championships drive regeneration?
Thank you for a rhetorical question. It's always nice to answer one. I think that, you know, we work with Manchester is one example. We work with in the Lighthouse Smart House Smart City project that we do. I think during all the panel discussions, it seems that the cities here prove that there is actually a long-term plan, and we are actually using the events to reach the plan. Whereas the events speak of regenerating the cities and how they succeed with that. It's just an observation from the different points of view here, but I think it's quite clear from the five or six cities who have spoken here that, you know, there is a plan in the city for how to do this and how to make jobs, how to reach the economic growth aims that you have and everything. And I think that relates to, do we need a host city network? Cities do speak already. I'm a political scientist and I work a lot with structure. There are so many structures and organizations for speaking together, particularly in Europe. There is the Eurocities, there are the tourism boards, there are, you know, plenty of them. So I think if we ask the question, who needs the host city organization? And is it a city organization, or isn't it a mega event city discussion, a transfer of knowledge discussion among the different event cities for the same event traveling from city to city, a transfer of knowledge between these cities? So I think it's like seeing who needs what and why do who have the feeling of needing this kind of network. I think that's quite important, because there is a plan in every city and there is a participation and there is an international, well, plenty of international organizations for actually speaking together about all the issues which relate to a city. So I think what's good about it is that we actually have here a mix of stakeholders. That's always perfect because we have different views on things. So it's a good exchange platform, this conference here. But it's important to keep in mind that in a lot of cities, business is planned, events are planned long before it starts. And it's not by accident that we transform during an event which takes place.
Any thoughts on those comments? Okay, we're going to move on. I'm going to skip one of the questions and move on to the last but one, which is an interesting one, which events offer the greatest ROI, which I'll come back to, and is it sport, business or culture? I guess the indeterminate factor there is what we mean by return on investment, which is a fascinating subject matter on its own. We could probably spend the rest of the day just discussing that. And what do we put in that basket? But I guess in a crude, loose sense, in terms of, you know, using the word probably impact rather than return on investment, what's people's thoughts? Is it sports, business or culture? Certainly there's an evolution, and somebody will say it's not a recent evolution, but there's certainly a coming together of the sports, business and culture world, much more so than there's ever been. I personally think that's very healthy. So let's open that question up. Any thoughts? Stuart, then Eamon.
I think that the key thing does come back to what are you looking for in your ROI, and I guess experience of things like European capital culture would tell us if you're actually trying to change the people and the culture of the communities in a city, then cultural events have a real strength in doing that. They have to come from the people, and therefore the people are more likely to engage them. And we've talked, I think the majority of the conference has been about sport events. It's just the way things have worked. And we've talked about how do you engage communities in sports events. The cultural sector don't usually ask that question. They don't usually have to ask that question. And I think when you come back to the business ones, from my point of view, if you just want economic terms, then business events are great, but they don't do a lot to engage populations. They do quite a lot to engage local businesses, but they don't do a lot to engage populations. So I think it probably answers the question of the one above that you skipped, Paul, which is if you want a portfolio and you actually want to deliver across a broad remit, you actually need a bit of each, and it depends on what your city or your country needs at the time on what that balance might be.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say you probably need all three. The challenge is with limiting public resources is, and most of these need some level of subvention, is how do you decide which are the most important ones. In Manchester, you know, I would promote sporting events as being stronger for social intervention and long-term change in communities as opposed to business. We've recently held the Conservative Party conference, which you'd probably put up there with business, and we're asking the question in Manchester, was it worth it? Because if you saw the press, the brand took a battering, really, because although economically it's worth it, Brand Manchester suffered and got quite a lot of criticism over the way it was handled on one particular evening. So you just don't know that in advance. This year we're hosting the European Science Festival and Conference, and the reason for that is because Manchester is working with the universities to promote innovation and science. So I don't think it's as easy as which one. I think it's about your long-term vision and how they fit within it. I would always look for a balanced portfolio, and that balancing has got to make sure that it delivers the outcomes. Sport, you're right, I think always gets challenged on its outcomes over long periods of time. And I think rightly so, culture less so, in terms of how it impacts. It's more high level, particularly in Manchester. But I think the balance is really important moving forward. And the fact that you have to plan 5 to 7 years in advance for most of these things means that budgets have to be locked down well in advance if you're going to achieve that balance.
Back. But I'd be interested to know from some of the other delegates here in terms of what their view is as well on that balanced portfolio across sport, business and culture.
Hi, it's Martin Fitchie from European Sports Championships Management. I think Stuart had a good point there about not just looking at the cities in this area. If you look at in a wider context of the country as well, so actually Glasgow is... If you look at Glasgow and Edinburgh, that's quite a good example where the two cities, you could say they focus on different things. So Glasgow is looking at hosting a lot more events like music concerts and sport events, and that actually works well with the culture in the city and the facilities in the city, whereas Edinburgh tend to be more focusing on the tourism and in terms of the history of the buildings and everything, and the festivals such as the Edinburgh Festival. So in that way, the two cities actually are focusing in different areas, but it kind of works together between them, and it can attract people into the area. And obviously, if the two cities talk to each other, then they can coordinate the timing of the events and how the transport works between the cities.
Any other comments in this area? It's okay. So playing devil's advocate a little bit, in terms of perceived political impact, because ultimately politicians pay the bills, where do people think that the barometer sits across sport, culture and business?
Well, I'd make a comment, which is almost relating back to the last point, Paul, was that I think sport seems to get the political buy-in from an awful lot of people. And if I may just very quickly go back to the previous point, is that I think it's a harmonisation of all of those three points. You know, a sporting event is much better now when it's got a big cultural wrap, visitor experience wrap around it anyway. So I think, you know, that'd be comment number one. And then actually trying to drag out the business benefit from it. Very small example, Gold Coast, they've got their Small Business Week coming up on the third week of February, I think it is. And again, they're looking at making, you know, the major events part of that sort of theme. So I think if we can get the sport and culture thing together as a package, I think that works. But it's also very important, I think, not to forget that, okay, part of the economic legacy, jobs, skills, etc., is to look at those business aspects. And I think, but I'd be surprised if a business event would ever drive, I might be wrong, big economic value. But look at Barcelona as a legacy. It's the number one, I think I'm right in saying the number one conference and expo place in Europe now, isn't it? Or it certainly was at one time.
I have a comment on that, and it's of course that business events, they do really come with a huge economic impact, but they're quite often forgotten. People tend to look at sports events and cultural events with more passion and more interest, but business events is often forgotten, and it's a pity, because scientific events and business events, they really go hand in hand with building of the identity of a city. And that's why I think we should speak of ROI in all of these segments, but we should maybe stress business events even more so, because quite often it's forgotten.
I think personally that's been one of the things that's been really good this last few days, is that probably one of the first times in my knowledge we've actually now got a forum that has got business, culture and sport in one room, which I think is really powerful. And the more we join that up together, the stronger we'll be in terms of moving forward as a global business of events. Okay, looking at time, it's 1:15. Let's move on to the last question, which is an interesting one, which probably hits all of those topics we've looked about in terms of impact, sustainability, regeneration. Events that position the city as a strategic influencer. And I guess that, you know, if you look at the trend of where events are moving to, certainly, you know, I went to Baku this year. It was undoubtedly, from an Azerbaijan perspective, they were looking to drive the profile of the nation as an international player, but also potentially as a tourism destination in the future. Middle East has done that. So do you, when you're determining what you're going to bid for, actually use that event as a strategic influencer? Want to open that up? Anybody want to start off? Dennis is shaking.
For sure.
For Do you want to expand on that?
I think we've all, whatever language we use, we're taking, we hate to use this term, but we're all looking at a holistic approach, aren't we, really? You've got to drive tourism, business, culture, engagement, health, you know, all those aspects. But I think it is always a missed opportunity when people do not use it as a way of repositioning the city or the state, you know, sending a completely different message to what they're doing. So I'm doing a bit of a Mike Lee. I think that getting that messaging right, that narrative around the event, touching every aspect, I think, is super important. And I think, yeah, any city or nation that does not look at the international benefits of driving, hosting something, you know, was it curling yesterday said that they had, did I get the figure right? 850 million people viewing? That was some extraordinary number. Well, you know, curling, who would have thought of that many years ago? And now it's related to Scotland as a cultural as well as sporting thing. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's important.
Hi, yeah, I think it's going to be quite interesting the next couple of weeks with Hamburg going to referendum in terms of whether they're going to want to bid for 2024 and how cities have actually got to convince their own citizens that they're going to want to go and bid for events. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of then impacts on cities. Because obviously, there were the kind of issues that Boston had with the big campaign to pull out, and obviously the different views with LA. So I think that kind of might have a different slant on it. Obviously, politicians need to get votes, so they're there for their next term, and how that then impacts on things. And obviously, that played a big role in Boston as well for the mayor there. So I think that's going to maybe shift the focus somewhat.
Ian? I guess there's an interesting debate between public influence and surveys and referenda, which are quite different.
But I think that your surveys can tell you, you know, if you go and if you get, I feel if you put to go down to a referendum, you've probably lost it already.
Well, I mean, I say this unashamedly, not being born and bred in Scotland, but I consider it very much passionately as my home now. But this city for me, last year was a game changer in terms of its international perception. Even up until 18 months, 2 years ago, you know, you talk about Glasgow and there was this perception, and if, you know, anybody high in the city was here, I'd say the same thing, that it was unsafe, you got glassed in a bar, you might get shot. Now, people came to Glasgow last year to the Commonwealth Games and their perception was totally changed. You know, it's a cosmopolitan, dynamic, sexy city. And you know, that in itself for me was probably one of the biggest things that the Commonwealth Games did for this city. And that will remain forever, you know, as because word of mouth will pass on and say it was a great place to go. Some of the finest museums in the world are in this city, and they're virtually hidden gems. Eamon?
Yeah, I did. It's a while ago, but I did mention Manchester made two bids for the Olympic Games. And in losing the second bid particularly, almost was a consultation process, because it was out of that that Mancunians got the pride of being seen as a city competing at a global level. So internally, as well as externally, Manchester changed that weekend. And that was the basis of which we bid for and got the Commonwealth Games. Losing that second Olympic bid was the vehicle really that promoted Manchester. My brother was in Atlanta at the time, and obviously Atlanta won the first bid. Atlanta's perception of Manchester changed from a Coronation Street perception into an international city perspective. So I think that you can't, you know, bidding is really important in order to promote the city. Measuring what the change in that city is in terms of its culture and its attitude is difficult because it isn't the only thing that's going on. There's other things in Manchester were going on at that time. But definitely internally in the city, there was a huge change at the Olympic bid stage.
Speaking from someone who's born and bred Glasgow and probably a slightly opposite view to yourself, been in London for the last 6.5 years during the Olympics and everything else, it was interesting from my perspective to understand the difference in the way it was viewed. A lot of local Londoners that were commuting on a daily basis felt quite aggrieved to London and how they weren't really engaged with a lot of things. And then coming back up to Glasgow and experiencing through the Commonwealth Games and through the kind of communication how engaged they were and how passionate they were about it being their city and them, you know, them kind of policing a lot of the situations themselves, which was very, very different to London, I think contributes to that aspect and how people can communicate through their departments and really engage with the kind of consensus of how people want to move forward with it.
One of the most inspiring things in this city, and I virtually said on record, I didn't necessarily think it would work, but I have to eat my hat, is that people make Glasgow. It was one of the most inspired strap lines I've probably ever seen a city do when it was launched about 6 months before the Games. And that became the whole sort of weave around the Games, and people did feel incredibly proud in terms of, and that has maintained and gone on. Stuart?
Yeah, it was just a side point. We always use examples that we know, but I'm sure there are loads of examples around the world. We've talked about the sort of one-off events, the events that you bid in. I mean, I think in terms of being a strategic influencer, you probably would struggle to get a better example than the Edinburgh festivals in Edinburgh and the position it gives Edinburgh to internationally influence culture and also to influence the exchange of culture between different countries. And as I say, I'm sure there are other examples from other cities where the same thing happens. But those events that are annual events that you can grow, develop, and we talked about learning the lessons from things you do wrong. You do it wrong, well, you get another chance next year to do it a bit better. And we looked at Edinburgh this year, and they readjusted the timings of the festivals this year to some extent because they were saying, well, let's shorten the window that people are in and make it a bit more intense so people will actually do more while they're here. Is that going to work? Is it not going to work? You know, there's a bit of intelligence that says it might work, but you don't know until you do it. You wouldn't necessarily do that with a one-off event. With an annual event, you can really try things like that. And I think it gives you the chance to put yourself at the front if you've got an annual event that you work on that you can do that kind of work with.
I think Stuart makes a really interesting point there, the annual events against the one-off events. And the annual events do provide sustainability, long-term impact, and probably help the regeneration debate better. You know, and that's something I think, you know, everyone should aspire to. Any final comments before we sort of wrap up and just do a sort of view on the 36 hours?
Just picking up on that theme, Paul, that in the venue development side of it, which, as you know, was in my bag, the impact that this had, we're looking at, we're only investing in venues that were going to be there for a long time, otherwise it's temporary. But if you look at the hydro, the SSE hydro, which was built as part of the SEC's business plan, Scotland needed a proper arena for entertainment and conferences. But the halo effect, as Scott Taylor's described it, of the businesses round about has been, you know, it's been significant because you wouldn't have gone to Finiston for a night out to a restaurant before because, well, there wasn't one unless it was a fish and chip shop. And not necessarily a great one, but that's somebody from Edinburgh speaking, not from but now, you know, it's a destination. People will go there pre-events and after events to have a meal, a good meal, before, you know, and so that there's a whole economic spin-off there that I don't know who's calculating it all, but it definitely happens. And that's built into the programme. Yes, the Commonwealth Games, and Eamon, I think, said it wasn't a full stop, you know, it's a part of the journey. The World Gymnastics Championships, just the other week, I mentioned the Davis Cup being held in the Emirates. You know, so the venues are being used, and Glasgow's in a good position to bid for more, and the European Championships is couldn't have done that without investment in the infrastructure. So it's using that infrastructure to maximum effect afterwards, thinking ahead that everything doesn't go into this one event. And it's not the same as Edinburgh Festival. Festivals, there's several, you know, just keep building. It's different events, but based on the infrastructure we've established.
Okay, we've got 5 minutes. As an opportunity to feedback, I'm sure that Cavendish Group will probably do some interaction with you formally in terms of exit polls and surveys and things. But it'd be just useful if anybody's got any thoughts on the last 2 days in terms of, you know, the right content, is it pitched right, the right format, the venue, whatever.
I never participated on events like that, and it was really interesting to participate. I'm really happy to be here. I said it already. I think the first feedback I already gave, this the second question of what would you have done better, and a second question, and maybe it's the timing, but I would like to see, for example, Rio more. We're holding the next Olympic and Paralympic Games next year, and it's kind of it didn't exist on this whole city event, and I believe you invited people from Rio 2016 to talk, and they were unavailable, and I came really at last moment. Some of the things that you are anticipating and being the things that are being discussed on this event last 1.5 days. Is okay, we have to change things, we have to look at budgets, and we have to have different views and innovation and all of that kind of thing. Coming from Brazil, the challenges there for funding are fundamentally different from Europe. And so we are where you are trying to anticipate. And we are having to change things, and I'm procurement director, so I look at a scope and I look at a budget here, and when I try to match these things, they just don't match, and we have to change things around. And what we usually hear is, but that's in the manual. And we ask, but who did that manual? And it was 20 years old manual, so things changed on the day-to-day business, on our offices. Things changed, but those manuals didn't change. And you look at things that make no sense at all, and when you try to challenge these things, it's different. And again, I don't want to be misunderstood, but it's when it's someone from Brazil trying to challenge what has been done for the last 4, 5, 6 Olympics, it's difficult to really have that argument heard. But I think that maybe next year, by the end of next year or in a couple of years, we could come up with lots of interesting ideas that we've had, and we would be really happy to share of how did we deal with that challenge of having the difficulties to fund it, and everybody has it, but and how did we change things, and many things hopefully will work. And well, there will be the cases that it didn't work, but we will be happy to share them as well.
I think that's really refreshing and fantastic, because I have to say, personally, I couldn't agree with you more. I think the LOC manual needs to be ripped up in most multi-sport games. Ian's nodding his head, having lived through the games as a member of the professional staff. And I think they constrain you as an organising committee. And to some extent, quite often, they force you to spend money that you don't need to spend. I probably won't say anything more than that, because it'd be too controversial. But no, I think there's a real opportunity, and the Olympics is a different beast because of its size and scale, but certainly some of the smaller multi-sport games probably do need to change. Any other final wrap-up comments on the 2 days? Okay, well, one last one then. We'll make this the last one, then I'll hand back to Ben.
My name's Neil Dealey from Condor. We are multidisciplinary engineers. I'd share this with you because it's perhaps a little bit unusual that I'm here. I'm not a sports events person, but I would say I've really enjoyed the last 2 days. I particularly enjoyed the things where there's been a little bit of aggro, if I can put it that way, a bit of disagreement. And perhaps if there was a comment, I think, you know, to actually have debates, good. And so I've enjoyed seeing it when there's been, not for disagreement's sake, but because it brings out discussion. So I've certainly enjoyed that. I've learnt a lot. There may be not a great deal I take back to my day job, if I'm being perfectly honest, but I've met some very interesting people, and I've enjoyed the breakout sessions, as I'm sure we all have, as a chance to talk to people. So I've had a good time. Thank you very much.
That's great. Thank you very much. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for the feedback, which obviously we will take on board, and we'll be contacting people for further feedback as well. Thank you all for coming to Host City 2015. We will be announcing the dates for next year within the next 2 weeks, so very much hope to see you there. We feel it's been a very fruitful event, and we've had some very positive feedback. If anybody wants to get in touch with me, I'm sure you'll be able to find my email address on all of the literature that's out there. Thank you very much, and hopefully see you next year.